Welcome to the Omfer podcast.
Welcome everyone to this DMI podcast with Koji Fusa, who is CEO of GVE. I'm John Orchard, OMFIF's CEO. GVE is a CBDC platform developed by Koji together with software developer Susumu Kusakabe. And GVE offers an open platform instant digital payment system for both wholesale and retail CBDC. And we'll explore both sides of that as we talk about Koji's offering in the next few minutes. It's nice to see you again, Koji. Thank you for joining us. Would you like to explain GVE in a little more detail, first of all?
Yeah, thank you, John. Susumu is a creator for near field communication, which is a very important part of smartphones technology. And he created near field communication NFC standard for Octopus in Hong Kong 24 years ago. And in our mind, Hong Kong Octopus is one of the first retail CBDC, offline retail CBDC. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I controlled the largest independent forex hedging technology company back in 2006 called MCOM. MCOM, as an independent forex hedging company, technology company, it had a 2% market share, global forex transaction market share, which is huge in terms of independent company. So we too thought Susumu's technology for single currency CBDC and my understanding of forex market could offer a cross-border multi-layer CBDC platform to the world in 2016. And we have decided to create the company in 2017. So that's the background.
Super. Thanks, Koji. And I think certainly you're right to raise foreign exchange. In our cross-border wholesale discussions, of course, people are trying to solve that issue as they try to develop CBDC to complement the private rails that already exist. So we can explore that in a moment. I'm looking forward to exploring those technical issues around the implementation of CBDC and also their policy implications as we go. So kicking off then, from many of our DMI roundtables and panels, I get the impression that developed world central banks are in less of a hurry perhaps to introduce CBDC than they initially were when Facebook first announced its stablecoin, for example. And there are various reasons for this, which we can come on to. But what are your thoughts on this, Koji?
I agree with you, John. Less developed countries are more keen and more serious about CBDC because of the financial inclusion. And most of the people are trying to get the financial inclusion by 2030. So, for example, in Nepal, 40% of the households still don't have a bank account, but 100% penetration of smartphones. So if they have the CBDC, then it's automatic that 100% of the household is going to get the bank account. The same thing for applied for other less developed countries. So less developed countries are slightly more keen to anybody, but also some futuristic country in the Middle East. They are keen to advance the CBDC because they want to be a global hub in some of the countries. And they think digitalization of fiat currency is a key for other digitalization of the nation. But developed country, they have such a good cash system, ATMs and everywhere. And you don't really need to think about financial inclusion. So developed countries, especially G7, are less keen on CBDC.
Yeah, and certainly in those countries, the needs at the moment seems more theoretical than practical, whereas it's more practical in developing markets, as you've just described. Albeit some of the developed world countries are interested in the possibilities it may open up for improved efficiencies in payments and indeed capital markets. And yeah, so part of the appeal of introducing CBDC is to upgrade the whole global payment system, wholesale and retail, so that it's real time 24 hours a day. And it certainly isn't that at the moment. One thing that's important to consider there is to look at batch processing of credit cards, for example. And so let's take that corner of the payments. Where do you see the advantages of moving on from the existing settlement arrangements for batch processing as an example, Koji?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question, John. So Susumu's original operation system, called Felica, he developed 24 years ago, is developed for offline payment as well as online. So it is, by definition, that's going to be batch processing. So most of the current payment system are batch processing. But now we are moving into 5G and IoT world, in which case that 24 hours, 365 days online is possible. So if we move from some offline payment to all online payment, in our calculation, our energy efficiency is going to increase 400 times. So one of Susumu's client is using, let's say, 400 servers with 220 watts per hour, whereas our server, one server, can service 280 million transactions per day, which is more than enough to replace 400 servers, which is has been used for batch processing. So the impact for environment is huge.
Okay, the sustainability issue does crop up increasingly, of course, in the CBDC discussion, and it's something that needs to be considered by those espousing DLT and blockchain solutions, although that is, of course, a discussion moving on, and there are developments there, but it's an incredibly expensive way to, in terms of energy, to run payments, and we can explore that again in a moment. You just mentioned offline payment. We've just run a piece talking about recent events in Kazakhstan, for example, where payments were offline for various reasons, and which revealed immediately the obstacles implicit in having an online payment system and to be completely dependent on it. So there are voices then pointing out the utility of offline payment, including from a resiliency point of view. What do you think about that, Koji? Would you agree with them?
Only in part. The best thing is all online. In order to have a financial stability, if you make it all online, the biggest advantage is that you can avoid a credit crisis time of situation, because the central bank and monetary authority can have all the information immediately. If somebody like Lehman is going to collapse, big bank is going to collapse, what is going to be impact immediately? So you can calculate how much money is going to be needed to put inside. But because of offline payment, and you have to worry about bank run, and the people cannot calculate how much money you need to support the financial stability. So financial stability is the main driver going forward to people trying to do online, all online payment. But probably it takes time. And so for the next 10 years, I agree it should be all online plus some offline payment. But offline payment, retail CBDC, as I said, 24 years ago, the Hong Kong Octopus is already developed for that purposes. And 99.9% of the population in Hong Kong over 16 years old is using Octopus card. So the 0.1%, if you give it to them, the card, the offline, offline CBDC is completed in Hong Kong. The same thing. The existing system can support offline in CBDC very easily. And so I don't really think any sort of time to need it to spend more on this offline CBDC, because it's possible.
Okay. And we do have other technology suppliers saying similar things. One thinks also perhaps of the Oyster card system used on London transport as an example. Exactly. Retail CBDC.
John, that's very important, because London Transportation Authority was close to Hong Kong Transportation Authority at the time, because Octopus was created by Hong Kong Transportation Authority before the Hong Kong is going to back to China. So the reason why Oyster is good is because Hong Kong Transportation Authority has this idea. At that time, of course, the word CBDC doesn't exist, but they said that for multiple purpose, general purpose of CBDC digital currency is going to be good. And of course, London Transportation Authority and also Singaporean Transport Authority immediately copied. That's why the origin of Oyster is the same as Octopus.
Yes.
But the difference is Oyster has been hacked twice, at least, if
right.
You look at the internet. whereas Octopus has never been hacked. That's the difference. And for CBDC, you shouldn't be able to be hacked. So Oyster cannot be the CBDC.
Yes, and we'll come back to security and resiliency, because I know that central banks are worried and cautious about that, for good reason. One of the most important debates to come up in our sessions almost every time, I'd say, is the tension between privacy and oversight if physical cash is phased out. Cash, of course, is anonymous, and there are obvious reasons why central banks shouldn't guarantee that anonymity in any digital payment system they facilitate. It's a very complicated and nuanced argument about where exactly they should surveil payments. And we see different approaches to that around the world. Where do you stand on this discussion, Koji?
If you think about where the privacy stands, there's a different kind of interpretation between, let's say, US and European countries. European countries are more cautious about the privacy. They want to have a more wider definition of privacy. What people in Europe is accepting is that they don't mind their own bank is having their data of where they spend money, but they don't want those banks who don't have the KYC process that you have gone through to keep the record. So, for example, there's a suspicion of the people in Brazil. Brazil Central Bank has implemented the CBDC from a one-tier model. So, but then they are suspicious. So they're not, the people don't think that Brazilian Central Bank say that they don't share information with the tax authority, but most of the citizens believe that they are going to share the information. So that's where you should draw the line, because current practice, current legal system is going to guarantee those sort of transactions which you not go through the KYC, you should be protected. And in order to do it, then you need to have a three-tier model instead of two-tier CBDC model. Three-tier model, the third tier is the DeFi people or credit card company. The second tier is banks, which has a much higher regulation globally. And the first tier is central bank. So most of the CBDC application is not actually for the central bank. Central bank supply only 6%, 7% of the total money supply for M2. So 93% of the money circulated is created by fractional reserve banking system by private sector banks. And these are the people who should be aware what should be the privacy protection. And the three-tier model can protect your privacy the same way as the people now can do now.
Of course, as you point out, private institutions, commercial banks, are already collecting this information and obliged to report on it where they see outliers. So it may be that there is more of a theoretical resistance to this idea of the loss of privacy than a practical one, as cashless payments increase as well. So do you think that the privacy issue will automatically disappear over time anyway, as people become used to contact payments through the commercial banks?
We need some education. So the total anonymity is required only criminals. We are those people who are using legitimate purposes. We don't mind our ID is going to be collected because your name is not going to be collected. So there's a difference. There is going to be the distinction between the which ID is going to be used for what. But that data is only be applicable for limited number of transactions which you are going to transact in the institution you have been going through KYC. So 90% of the transaction which you are going to do is going to be anonymous anyway, because globally that this ID numbers is going to be function as a person who is an economic agent in the system. In that way, that you can have a privacy the same way as you have a privacy now, and nothing less of the privacy in the future. That education is necessary.
This discussion leads back, as you say, to the tier model. Most central banks that we talk to, not all, but most of them don't want a one-tier model where they would have direct accounts with the general public. And there are multiple common sense reasons for that. And this is part of that. The PBOC, which is running perhaps the most significant trial of CBDC so far opted for a two-tier system for various reasons, including financial stability. And most of the other central banks considering CBDC are leaning in that direction, the ECB, for example. Also because they don't want to have accounts directly with the public. You're talking about a three-tier system. Koji, do you want to expand on how that works and why it's a good idea versus a two-tier system in particular?
As you can see in the diagram below, illustration below, that three-tier model is look like this. So the first tier is a central bank. Second layer is banking institutions globally, which has a different kind of set of integrity globally in order to support the fractional reserve banking. The third tier is what can be DeFi institution or credit card company, which are non-bank institutional payment service providers. So payment service providers can be either second tier or third tier. And in fact, there can be a fourth tier as well, but just for the simplicity, this three-tier model is high, can ensure the privacy level, which is currently people are enjoying. At the same time, you can have a same kind of integrity, can have an integrity of a bank institution, which is needed by most of the monetary authorities think that they need it. The difference going forward in the technology-wise is that if, for example, Meta or Amazon is going to come in the third tier and they can do the technology apply real-time transaction, so you don't really need much of the fractional banking system, which is the bank's main feature difference, because velocity of money, which is a speed of circulation of money, is going to be much more or faster than currently it is using the cash. So that is what we call the three-tier model. And this three-tier model is patented in the US, Singapore, and Japan by GVE.
Okay, that's very useful, Koji. Just to clarify on new entrants to the payment system. So if there were stable coin operators that regulators approved of, you would see those in the third tier and not the second tier. Some have argued they might be in the second tier.
No, it cannot be second tier. It has to be third tier. Because stablecoin is just assuming that they are going to be assuring it with their credit to give the one-to-one ratio to a fiat currency. And of course, they can apply for the banks. And if they are becoming a digital bank, if they get the digital banking license, which is much easier than the usual banking license, of course, they are going to move to second tier. Yep. But without banking license, they are not allowed to leverage the same way as banks do.
Okay, so by the time a stable coin were a bank de facto, a narrow bank, some of them are talking in that way, perhaps they then move to tier two.
Correct, yeah. And the narrow banking concept is very important because narrow banking concept was very popular after the credit crisis. And the people, the economists was crying for the technology which can separate narrow banking from fractional reserve banking, and actually CBDC can do it.
Okay, and in terms of GVE's technology, presumably your offering caters for all three tiers.
Correct. That's the difference from until now. People have been talking about wholesale CBDC from retail CBDC because people have been assuming the security levels for the retail CBDC is weaker. But we have created a server which is as robust security as the central bank's one, real-time gross settlement, currently employed by most of the country for wholesale CBDC. And we have achieved the convenience in the level of retail CBDC, the bottom line. So we have created the system which has both having the convenience at the same time, the security, and in which case, there is no reason why it cannot be used for wholesale CBDC and the retail CBDC.
Okay, good. Well, that's interesting. One of the questions I'm sure that central banks might ask is whether it's open platform or runs the risk of creating a walled garden from their point of view. Any thoughts on that, Koji?
Yeah, it is open platform. We have also helped to ISO to create a new international standard in order to interoperability. And we are compliant with this interoperability standard called ISO 24643. And as long as people are going to comply with ISO 24643, the security level is going to be guaranteed and the interoperability is going to be guaranteed. So it is very open source. The difference is, of course, the central bank has its own server instead of they are going to share with others. And one server can have 3 billion personal account plus 300 million corporate account, which can cover globally with 250 different currency accounts. So that way, it's exactly the same as real-time gross settlement works. We can now work for the retail CBDC.
Good. Okay. Well, that's useful. Let's explore the technology in a little bit more detail. There's lots of discussions that we hear about creating a new payment system involve blockchain or DLT, and that opens up a new set of questions about the nature of the tokens and contracts used to settle transactions within that system. That's quite a complicated discussion in its own right. And we know that there are reservations at central banks still about this technology for various reasons, which we can go into. But what's your approach to the DLT topic at GBE Koji?
Okay, so first, either token-based, account-based, the Octopus, which Susumu has helped to create, that's on token-based. So if you charge a card, and if I give that card to you, then this is token, so you have the value there. So it is token-based. So we have moved to from token-based to account-based, because if you are doing the transaction for, let's say, 100 million times per day, then token-based, which is a batch system, is going to have a big pressure. So we have moved by moving to from batch system to online system, or online, then you can have a much more so flexible, much more less pressurized system. That's first thing. DLT technology, if you think about it, the DLT technology people are talking about is not really technology. It's a concept that the majority of server is going to outbid to the central bank server. So it may be a good concept, but it's not going to be for CBDC, for central banks, because central bank has to have their server. They have to be an administrator for their fiat currency, and they cannot add a third party to be the owner or administrator for their record, right? So DLT concept and fiat currency concept, central bank concept, in the monetary theory wise, it doesn't match. So that's as simple as that. So private sector, they can develop DLT, which might be sometimes is cost effective, but not for large a population, nor it can be applied for central bank digital currency.
Okay, just to explore your account-based system for a moment, away from tokens, Koji, as you say, would your system then need to duplicate accounts that commercial banks would have with retail customers? How does the account-based component of that work in your case?
Well, so account-based side, we don't duplicate. We are just moving the current analog world and then some digital world, just moving to all digital. That's all.
Right.
So if you have been, if you have an account in Barclays, but if you don't have an account in NatWest, and if I have a NatWest account and don't have a Barclays account, you send me a transaction, but then the record of Barclays Bank on the NatWest account is going to be changed. But because Barclays Bank doesn't have my account, so it doesn't change. So it's exactly the same way as currently working, but we all digitalize. So our system is nothing different from currently what's done. We just eliminate old analog manual work. That's all.
Okay. So it sounds a little bit like the principle of how RTGS works in that case.
It is the same. RTGS for every country, there are limitation of number of banking institutions. So, for example, in Japan's RTGS, it is limited to 1,920 counterparty. In our case, counterparty can be 8.3 billion people with 250 different accounts. So it's massive different flexibility.
Okay. You mentioned technology versus monetary theory a minute ago. I want to explore that in a bit more detail. And you mentioned that actually at our Arab CBDC conference recently, where you were speaking as well, that DLT isn't compatible with monetary theory. Could you go into that in a bit more detail? This is quite an intriguing idea.
Yeah. So central bank, as you know, has been created by Swedish first, and then developed by British, let's say 350 years ago. And the issue, initial issue, is that until then it was private sector banks who has been developing the banking system. And the initial banking idea of banknotes is that the bank is keeping the master ledger, and the record of the bank ledger is a correct one. DLT, on the other hand, is that if the majority of the server says that the bank's record is wrong, and somebody else, let's say Amazon's record, is correct, then is going to be not central bank, but Amazon is going to be controlling the record. So in which case, the fiat currency has been created as a debt for the central bank. But then how do you do? If the master ledger is now moved to Amazon, then where is the debt is going to be? So it's a much, much more complicated than what DLT people think. And I think that the eventual the conclusion is going to be that you cannot move the master ledger from central bank to third party, especially for those people which are doing that the personal sort of computer-wise, some private sector people who are not so much understanding the banking system is going to be on the database, and then now this is my sort of debt. And the credit worthiness of that person who owns a computer, it cannot be that person who has the debt, whose debt issuance. So that's the reason. It's as simple as that.
Okay, well, that's a fascinating and complex area, Koji. I know the DLT crowded, as much as you can generalize, are very innovative. So maybe they'll come up with a way to reconcile that problem. Certainly they are already reconciling issues around energy consumption and bandwidth. But let's see. But that's a discussion that we'll continue to have. In the meanwhile, it's been great talking to you today, Koji. These are very complicated and interesting themes. You've given a great overview of some of them here. So if people would like to hear more, they definitely should get in touch with you at GVE to explore these issues in greater depth. But thank you very much for talking to us today. And we look forward to speaking to you again soon, Koji.
Thank you very much, John.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.